everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ethiopian Adoptees Unapologetically Unfiltered. I'm so glad you could join me. Okay, guys, I am so excited to get into our fifth episode, and this week we have our second guest with us, another Ethiopian adoptee. His name is Gideon Prince. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to what Gideon has to say about his experience as an adoptee growing up in a predominantly white area, how he's navigated that in his own way. Like myself, Gideon also grew up in New Hampshire, a different area, but in New Hampshire as well. So I've been so fortunate to have his friendship throughout the years, and has really helped me and just kind of navigate this world as an Ethiopian adoptee and in very similar environments growing up. And I don't want to say too much about what he has to say, but I urge you to really think about what adoptees have to say, for those of you who are not adoptees listening, because it's really hard. I think even as Gideon and I were having our conversation, granted it was really late at night, there was just a series of unfortunate events, but by the time we were able to record this, it was pretty late, but it still, you know, it takes a lot of vulnerability to be very open and to say what you want to say, knowing that your friends and your family and other people who are opinionated, you know, we are all opinionated individuals. Oh my goodness. But you know, it's very hard to do. You have to put yourself in a very vulnerable kind of position. And as Bahailu and I said, and Gideon and I speak about it too a little bit, you know, this is what we would have wanted as adoptees, and that's why we're doing it, to pay it forward, and it's for them. So I'd say to you, you know, listen to what he has to say, and really think about what he has to say. And Gideon, I really appreciate you and your willingness to share your story. So without further ado, Gideon Prince. Okay, so today, and for today's podcast episode, I am here with Gideon Prince, an Ethiopian adoptee. Hi, Gideon.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, to talk to all of us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Okay, so for this one, Bahailu's episode was more of just kind of a free flow. This interview is going to be a little bit more directed. That's what Gideon felt most comfortable with. So, you know, every interview might be a little different. So just to start off with, Gideon, do you remember the year that, you know, you were first put up for adoption?
I do.
What year is that?
It was 05.
2005. Okay. Yeah. So do you remember the events leading up to being brought to the orphanage?
I do. It started off with, it was my mother who passed away first. Hmm. I was like 5 years old. And then at the age of 5 and a half, my grandmother passed away. And then that's when I went to my uncle's for like 3 months. Mm. And then it's just like we had a series of family issues because of his wife, and then my mom and my grandmother didn't have a great relationship. Mm. And so it just like caused a little rift between her and my family. Mm-hmm. So then my uncle decided, I guess, it was time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Okay. So, do you remember like the day... I don't know, like, in my story, like, a van pulled up, right? Was there a van for you? Like, what was that process? Like, do you remember the day you were taken to the orphanage?
Oh, I do. Mm. It was not a van.
Oh.
Oh, it was a motorcycle.
It was a motorcycle?
It was a motorcycle.
Jeez.
It was a good day.
You're, like,
dismal. It was, like, all I know is I was not very well prepared. Yeah. It was like no one told me what was going on.
Yeah.
It just, when the guy showed up, it was time.
Yeah.
You know? It was just like, that's when I found out. It was like I was leaving and everything. It was just like, it was heartbreaking because me and my cousin were very close. And so it was less like,
yeah. If you don't mind me asking, did they even though you said like they, you know, they don't prepare you, and this has been a very kind of consistent, you know, thing that a lot of us have experienced, but highly, same thing with myself. It was just very much like, not even, nobody even said anything. But for you, did they, when the guy or the woman on the motorcycle arrived, did they tell you, oh, like, this is what's going on? Or were you just kind of like, bye? Or were they kind of like,
say goodbye to you? They said goodbye. And then it's like, I knew at that point, because first, me and my sister was like, we're like the similar age. She's like 2 years older than me. As like, before I went to my uncle's, we separated, and then I knew it was just like
something was happening
either way, because like, we already knew it was like family didn't get along and everything.
So you weren't necessarily sure to like what extent something was going to happen, but something was going to happen, and you knew it because of the events. That's interesting. If you don't mind me asking, like, how old were you at the time?
I was 5 and a half.
Yeah. It's crazy what you can remember at that age, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I only remember the bad stuff, you know? It's like, sometimes there'll be some good memories, but there's really not much.
Yeah. And it's, I think people forget, like, even the very early events of adoption, like, before even you get to your forever home or whatever, there's, like, just so much trauma that you go through.
I agree.
Okay, so moving on. So what was it like? Do you remember, like, the driver, the motorcycle ride to the orphanage when you got there? What was that experience like?
When we got there, I remember there was a gate going through the gate and everything, and then you see all the kids outside playing. It's just like, I remember getting my medical, getting my shots and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, then my adopted mom told me, it was like, UNICEF and Doctors Without Borders were giving me my, I got my physical with them. I'm like, I still have my first vaccine shot.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The little scar from it. I'm like, things have changed these days. But, and then I remember getting shaved. It's just like, it was, and then just like, you, the gates closed, and then you were just trapped in prison for forever.
That's what it felt like, huh? Prison.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like you couldn't leave.
Yeah. And you were at Wide Horizons as well, right?
I was. Yeah. We were together.
I was gonna say, I don't know if everybody know that Gideon and I were in the same orphanage. Do you remember us, like me being there?
I feel like we have pictures somewhere.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I know my mom took pictures of everyone. I don't think we were that far apart when we got adopted.
No. How long were you in the adoption agency for?
I'll say like a year and a half to two.
Yeah. Some people. Yeah, so you were there for like a year and a half to 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I got adopted at the age of 7. So I was like that.
You were there for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also a very interesting thing, because I know me and my sister, we were adopted like within like months, I guess, which is, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but like it is what it is. But not there are people, it's definitely a good thing. And so why would you say it's a good thing?
It's because when you're there, you see everything. It's just like a lot of kids is like, you don't have, you have people watching you, but you don't have like the physical connection, or it's like people that actually love and care about you. It's just like people getting paid.
And do you remember what that experience was like living there for that long? Like, is there anything that you want to share that sticks out to you?
I can tell you there was a mean nanny.
A very mean nanny. Oh, jeez.
A very mean nanny.
Oh, no.
And then going to school for the first time.
At White Horizons?
Yeah, first time.
What was that like?
Still can't read and write. there we're at.
Yeah.
No, but it was cool. It was like your first time going to class and everything. It's like learning, but just like there's some good things that came out of it. There's some bad things, but some things you just want to forget.
Yeah, some things you just want to forget. It's interesting that you say that, and I won't go into it because I think a lot of people don't understand that again, me and my sister were there for a little bit, but some very problematic things happened there. Am I right? Can I say that more generally?
Oh yeah, you definitely can.
Okay. I'm not sure if it's because I was only there for, you know, a few, I don't know. I want to say I was there maybe like for 5-6 months. I don't think I was there for that long, but it's been interesting because even talking to Bahailu and talking to you, and because Gideon and I have been friends for several years, you guys seem to remember stuff. And I don't know if I've just like it was so traumatic that I blocked it out, but like I don't really remember much. Yeah.
I would say it's like for a long time I blocked out, just trying to forget about it, you know?
Right.
That's like one of your coping mechanisms, just trying to forget what you've gone through.
Yeah.
And just like for me, it's just in the back of my head, just like, but
yeah,
I still picture like what it looked like
when
I was there.
Yeah, it's very
and
traumatic.
Then sharing rooms, and it's just like, yeah,
yeah,
I was like, I can still tell you who I shared with the really? Bunk bed, yeah, because we're still friends these days,
yeah,
and we still connect.
And how is, do you find it helpful, or maybe is it triggering to have that connection, or both?
I think it's helpful because it's like, they got us through it. We all got through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, without my friend Mahari, I wouldn't be in New Hampshire. So
really?
That's my story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I ended up in the coldest place.
He's like, it could have been California or something.
Ah, could have. Yeah.
Yeah, we all got stuck in New England. Okay, so, you know, I will move on from that because I know that's a very traumatizing kind of time for a lot of people, a lot of adoptees, you know, in that, especially for those that have spent years there at White Horizons. Do you remember when you first met your adoptive parents, what that was like, that process of like leaving the orphanage, how you felt?
I do. I remember all of it.
Yeah. Wow.
I do. I can tell you the first time is like, I got a booklet. I think I don't know if we all got a booklet of our family.
Yeah.
But mine sent pictures of the whole family. It's like my sister, my brother, and then my grandparents and everything.
Yeah.
I just like got to, before they came, I got that. Mm. And then it's like, I knew what they looked like. And then on the first day we had, when they came, it was like we had a whole meal together at the orphanage. It's like all the adoptee parents and they're introducing each other.
Yeah.
My dad got sick that day.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Mr. Prince.
Yeah, I know. Oh, weak stomach.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he got sick, and then it was like we got to see some cool stuff. It's like we traveled together. It's like you had that 2-week period where you hang out with the whole family before
go.
Yeah. And it's just like I remember taking a ride with tour guide Mulat, who we are still good friends with.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we got
he drove
us everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember getting my first thing I picked out was I got a little cross. Mm-hmm. It's like handmade beaded Ethiopian cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my first ever. It's like, oh, that's mine.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Oh, because
yeah, it's because we didn't have things that are like ours.
Yeah.
So that was kind of.
Yeah. Became something special.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And what was it like leaving? Like, when you left and you were, like, arriving to, you know, New England, New Hampshire. What was that like?
I was pretty excited.
You were excited to get out?
I was excited. It was about time. It was about time.
Yeah.
So, I was excited. Got the plane ride. Was fun.
Yeah.
It's because we was like, a lot of adoptee kids were on the same plane.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So I was like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like hanging out with parents. And then we landed in, I think it's like Boston. I don't know which
probably
airport.
Probably Boston.
Yeah, most likely Boston. But yeah, and then meeting the whole family, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was like, now you got a home.
Yeah. Interesting. So what, do you remember like the initial kind of events as you were trying to, you know, become some like a part of this new community in New Hampshire, you know, where you've called home for most of your life?
Some events, it's tough.
Yeah.
Because you create your own a new identity as you get older and older.
Right.
It's like with like some of your stuff you remember, it's like it's all gone.
Yeah.
I feel like I took sociology. It's like it's like you assimilated to your own cult. It's like to a new environment, yeah. And you just left the old one behind.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah. And did you find assimilating, I think that's a great word to use, into, you know, this new community easy? Did you find it hard? Did you just think something you had to do, just go into survival mode? Like, how did you go about doing that?
It's tough. Yeah. It's like, as a young kid, it's easy. It's like coming here when you're really young.
Yeah.
Kids don't really care about anything. Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, it wasn't easy because going to school and everything, trying to learn the language, trying to make friends, yeah. Trying to make like connections with people was hard. But over time, it got easier.
Yeah.
But over time, you also lost who you were and who you, like, yeah. With the important things.
Yeah. That's a really good point when you say you've kind of, because the environment, and correct me if I'm wrong, kind of forces you to choose it. Like, either you get to try to keep this, like, you know, very new identity as, like, an Ethiopian person, because you're still, like, what, 7 years old, so you're still very young, right? Or it's generally, you're forced into assimilating to this community's culture because that's the dominant one. I don't know about you, but I feel like there wasn't a space to figure out who you are. It was more like you needed to assimilate with everybody else. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it's pretty much as like, or whatever, it's like wherever you came from, like Ethiopia, that's all behind.
Yeah,
it's just like now it's just like you got this, and it's just like your parents are teaching you this is like learning a new language.
Yeah.
And it's like the old one is just like the hardest part was, it's like you didn't have any connections back home anymore. Yeah. It's just like that got ripped and it's like that's gone.
And I think that's a great point, because a lot of people for some reason fail to understand, especially like I just turned 6 soon after I was adopted. And again, you were 7. My sister was like significantly younger. She was 3. So she doesn't really remember anything. But I don't think people understand that you still have a recollection. You still have memories ingrained at that time about like people that were your family, your friends, your culture, your language. And then that is completely ripped away from you. But you still still remember it, and it's like everybody's asking you to forget about it, like that no longer is important, that not even, maybe not necessarily important, there's no place for it in your new community. You have to now, this is home, you have to, you know, deal with that and become a part of this community. Like, how was that for you, that sort of having to leave everything behind despite knowing everything about it and being forced to, you know, not speak your language, learn another language, learn another culture, forget your family that you very deeply knew, you know? Like, I don't know.
It's still a constant struggle, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because trying to decide who you are now and who you were back then is still just like, even when I was 7 in middle school, yeah. It's like I call it like an identity crisis, because yeah. You're being pulled apart by two sides. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, do you want to be this? Do you want to be that? It's like, is there a middle ground? But yeah. It's like one side says no. And then I had like a similar struggle when I went back in 2019 to visit my sister.
Yeah.
It's just like, even when I went there, I was like, oh, I didn't speak the language.
Yeah.
So it's just like, they were not happy with that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, where do I belong?
Right.
So it's like, because I went to the gym and then apparently I couldn't speak the language and the lady cussed me out.
Really?
Yeah, she did.
In Ethiopia?
Yeah.
Oh my.
She was not very happy. I'm like, you dumb. I'm like, no. I'm like, do you want to hear why?
Yeah.
And no. And she just gave me an attitude and just, I'm like, oh. But it was just like, cool. It's like, it's not my choice.
Yeah.
That I can't speak. I can't. I live in one of the whitest states.
Yeah,
no,
right.
One of the whitest states. Like, most of the adopted people from Ethiopia here don't speak. And right. It's just like, it's not, we don't choose that, we just go with it.
Right.
And it's just like, I had no one to speak. Yeah. My family didn't force to keep it going.
Yeah.
It's just, after a while, just lost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad.
Because you're losing your, like, identity along with that loss of language.
You're losing is just, like, what makes you who you are at one point.
That's heartbreaking, but that's something I can definitely relate to. How, I guess, in part, right, you're talking about growing up in a predominantly white area, right, and how that was, it that further strips you from your culture, any sort of culture, because now you have to find yourself within whiteness. How was that for you growing up in a predominantly white area, losing who you are as an Ethiopian, you know, living in a predominantly white area?
I will say I did a very good job adjusting to my environment.
Yeah,
I did a very good job to the point where my friends like, are you black? I'm like, not really anymore. It's just like, I see the benefits that I have.
Yeah.
I also see is like the disadvantages.
Mm.
It's because when everything goes around, it's like when the Black Lives Matter movement was going on.
Yeah.
It's like you can see both sides, but at the same time, it's like, who wants to hear your opinion?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, that's very interesting. And maybe like bringing it back a little bit to what you were saying about feeling like your Ethiopian side, the Ethiopian side of you, and then like the adopted part of you, like there wasn't a space that you could take up wholly, right? You're not white like the rest of your family, and you're Ethiopian, but then you have, and I talked about this in the previous episode, how, you know, Ethiopian immigrants are in these people and families that have the language, that have the culture, when they go to speak to you and they find out that you don't have that, it's like you all of a sudden are now responsible for all the consequences that come with being adopted. So like the fact that you lost your language, now it's on you that you lost your language, despite the fact that, like you said, you did not have any choice in that. So what was it like growing up in that sort of dichotomy, you know, being caught between, you know, I don't really feel black or African or Ethiopian, and then you're also very clearly not actually white. So how did you deal with that?
Be honest with you, like most things, I did not deal with it. I just let it be.
Yeah.
I just rode the wave until it bit me in the ass at one point, you know?
Yeah.
But because it's just like, at one point I was struggling, is who am I, trying to figure out?
Yeah.
It's like, what makes me who? It's just like, then it's like, you go until you spiral out of control.
Yeah.
And until it's like, eventually I realized, it's like in high school, I'm like, I'm both. I don't have to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
I can choose to be both, or I can be only one.
Yeah. You realize that was actually up to you. You got to make that decision.
Yeah, it was my decision and nobody else's.
Kind of, because I want to move on, but I think you're bringing up a lot of great points. I can't speak today. By the way, we're recording this at 10:30 at night, so Gideon and
out
of
I, Denny's.
Outside of Denny's, like this could not be more strange. But you're talking about this idea of choice, right? And one of the first episodes that I did, it was as an adoption, as an illusion of choice, right? Do you find that throughout your life, you know? Did you find the concept of you having a choice bizarre? Because, and I don't want to put like words in your mouth, but as a result, because adoption is very much a thing that happens to you, but you have literally almost no say in when you go, where you go, who takes you. Like that's just something that happens to you. And then you're saying with identity crisis that, you know, I have to choose. And it's, I don't know if you want somebody to pick for you. I mean, I know I did. I was like, somebody make a decision for me, because I don't know. Did you find that like making those kinds of choices, like those internal battles, those choices you had to make for yourself, did you find it hard to do that because of the lack of choice within adoption itself?
Yes. I had a hard time. Very, very hard time. It's because at one point I missed home so much. It's like I missed just like who I was. It's like I missed Ethiopia a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just like my family and my sister. It's like I grew up with my sister. She's like, I think she's like 28 right now. And it's like we were very close. It's like that family connection.
Yeah.
And then when you come here, it's just like I lost my whole connection with my siblings. It was like after my grandmother died, it's just like we all split.
Yeah.
It's like my sister was forced to go somewhere else. My other one got married. And then I eventually found out I had a brother.
Mm.
It was like a few years ago. Yeah. Like not too long ago. It was like he's in his
40s. Oh wow.
I know. But it's just like if I had a choice, I would have picked this day.
Right.
You know? But it's just like we don't have that choice.
I don't think you guys will truly understand how brave it is to say that, because as this podcast, what its aim is just to be genuinely authentic and honest about adoptee experiences. And there are some of us, right, that, and I can't really relate to yours specifically, Gideon, because both my parents are dead, and I think in a lot of ways I thought of Ethiopia as like just dead to me in a lot of ways, in that kind of way. But people don't understand that, like, especially in your example, what you're saying right now, you have a family, you have siblings, you remember all of them, which is, I can't imagine, because I feel like all my memories are so foggy that I think I can kind of push through. But having such a vivid memory, not of just the people, but your connection, why you were so close to them, and then having somebody rip you away from that and then pretend like that didn't even happen to you. You know, you lost so much more than just the language. You lost so much more from just like a geographical placement within the world, right? You lost very deeply rooted relationships with your family. How has it been since then, like having to live here, right? You're in New Hampshire, but you're still seeing like developments. Like you found out that you have a brother in his 40s a few years ago. You know you have a sister that's living. Like how do you like live every day, like in process that mentally, knowing that that part of your family is still very much still existing and going without you?
For me, it's like how I look at it. It's like when you get older, it's like you make your own choices.
Mm.
You can choose to make it part of your life, or you can choose to move on.
Mm.
It's like I know one of my closest friends is like him and I were both in the same orphanage. We were there together for a little while, and his mom was the one who got me in contact with my mom here in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from his ideas, it's like he has moved past.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't play a huge role.
Yeah.
In his complete life, but it's like for me, it's just like it's who I am.
Yeah.
And it's just like I want to be connected. It's like I want to, when I get older, I like to support my siblings if I can.
Yeah.
I want to keep that connection. I know when I visited, it was like the first time I saw my sister.
Mm.
It was like the one that's closer to my age. It's like she was bawling her eyes because it's like we both missed each other a lot.
Yeah.
It's like I was.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, and I think your testimony and just like your truth is so incredibly important, because for many, just because it's your truth, right?
Yeah.
But also because I think you're really speaking to some things that I cannot speak to from my personal experience. But I think it's knowing that some of us, I think we all have like a want to be connected to Ethiopia, but some of us, like you're like, I want to be connected and I want to be there and I want to be as present and available in connection with their life as much as that's possible, right? And you have to understand, and I'm I guess now I'm talking to you listeners, especially adoptee parents that have reached out to me. If you are in this situation, that's a completely different kind of adoptee you're dealing with, right? Because it's a difference when your child, like you said, your friend, but nothing wrong with that. If he's like, I can kind of move past it, right? And that's going to come with other issues. But when you have such a deep-rooted connection like you do, asking an adoptee just to exist now in this new environment with these new people and forget about them. And like you said, it's you see them as a part of your identity, right? And that's what's lost in a lot of us, something that we try to find. So do you think that's like one of the reasons why you think that you're so close to them, because like you feel a sense of who you are when you're around them, or when you know you're close to them, like you feel more connected, like literally connected to yourself?
I agree with that statement.
Yeah.
I do feel more connected to who I am. It's just like, it makes you feel whole again. It's like, that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
It's like, because right now it's just like you're living in,
yeah,
you are who you are right now. It's just like, yeah, you have different identity, and that when you put them together, it's like they both come together. It's just like,
yeah,
make one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna move on because I could just keep dissecting this all day. So what was it like? Just like growing up again, like grammar school, middle school, high school in this, you know, New Hampshire area. How did your identity fluctuate? How did you cope? Because again, you see, it sounds like you have such a very vivid memories about your adoption and your process and the people. So you can't, it's not like you could just be like, oh, I forget it. Like, you know it, and you're still trying to build an identity that can survive this incredibly white area, which I'm sure is very ignorant. A lot of people are ignorant.
I remember the first time I went to elementary school. Mm. I was pretty much one of the few. It's like there wasn't that many,
yeah,
color people in my school.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was kind of sad, but it's like not having someone that you can relate to.
Yeah.
Or it's just like someone that looks like you.
Yeah.
It's like I never had a teacher in, growing up here that looked like me until I had a security guard,
yeah,
at my high school.
Yeah.
It was like, it took a while, but you notice things as you go along. It's just like how people treat you, how people treat your history. It's like, where you came from and everything. It's like, how did they use it?
How did they treat that? Your experience.
And my experience, they should have treated it a little, I don't say better, but it was like an excuse.
Yeah.
It's like, when I used it pretty much very well.
Yeah.
To get past a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, I remember, like, high school, I remember, it's like, pretty much, it's like I wrote a shitty paper.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. It was a shitty paper. But
yeah,
because then kids, it's like everybody was looking at it. I'm like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
It's like they were reading it, laughing, and I'm like, and then the teacher's like, Gideon, how many languages did you grow up speaking? And then I'm like, I moved around a few times.
Yeah.
So I was like, three.
Yeah.
And then he's like, see, kids? And then it's just like, you grew up. It's like, you came from a different country, you came here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've been here for like 15 years.
Yeah.
I really don't need to be using this excuse anymore.
Yeah.
But it's like the teacher was giving me that excuse.
Yeah.
And it's like that pass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't need that pass. I needed a little more work.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know. I didn't like that at all.
You didn't like how they would use that to like kind of dumb, like make you look like you're not capable,
yeah,
of what everybody else is capable of.
Yeah, pretty much.
You kind of want to be held accountable. Like, can you hold me accountable as opposed to, he's some adopted black kid that doesn't know how to speak English, you see? Like, I can't hold him accountable.
I just need a little more work. And right, it's like, but I don't like, the teacher shouldn't be making excuses for you. The teacher should be, like, showing you how to do it.
Right.
Like being right there, but instead
treating the same as all the other white kids.
Yeah, but I got all excuses.
Yeah.
but I did use them very well for my advantage.
Yeah, I mean,
you something's gonna come out of it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's just like, and then it goes to like white privilege.
Yeah.
Because
let's talk about that.
I will say I do have a little white privilege.
Yeah.
It's because it's just like my mom's in politics. Everybody knows my mom.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, oh, I ain't gonna be afraid.
Yeah, right.
It's like, if you're gonna do something bad, like, you're gonna have to deal with her.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna be me.
Literally, let me tell you, white moms have power. Like,
yeah, I'm like, it's like when it's like Black Lives Matter movement going on, like, you'll see me out on the streets. I'll be driving.
Yeah.
And it's just like, was I worried? Nope.
Yeah.
It's because I knew I had, it's like someone in my corner that I could literally.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
In the previous episode, I was talking about this, and I said the way I've conceptualized this kind of privilege, I guess, that we have, I say it's like limited secondhand white privilege, right? I say limited in the sense that it doesn't really, for me, extend beyond my town. Would you say the same thing for you?
Oh, I agree. If I moved out of here, I don't think I'd feel the same how comfortable I was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have that sense of security.
Let me ask you about that. So when you went off to college, what state did you go to college in?
I went to two. Yeah. I went to Seton Hall in Jersey, and then I went to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Seton Hall was one of the whitest states, not the whitest schools, but they had programs where it was like, I had a black professor.
Yeah.
And I learned about Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
I was part of the scholar.
Yeah.
It was like, that connection is like, that was awesome. And then when I went to Sacred Heart, it's holy cow.
Yeah.
It's like, they had nothing. They had BSU, but it's just like, oh. It's like, you won't see a lot of black kids at all.
Wow. So it was almost like went backwards for you.
Yeah, it's because I could have gone to a black school, but, you know, I would have been very out of place.
That's actually really interesting. I'm going to pause and just kind of talk about that a little bit. Personally, I found myself that I could navigate white spaces so much more than I could navigate black conversations with black people that weren't adoptees, than, or like, just let alone, like, if I would go into and this happened multiple times growing up, if there was like a group of black people in like in an area, right, and I had to go walk past them, or I had to talk to them, or they were present, I would sweat profusely, and I mean like disgusting. I would sweat and sweat, because I was like, I felt like it's because, even though externally I felt like I should be able to, I had somehow like neglected any sort of, not even African part, like just black part of me, that I did not even know myself in relation to blackness, that I had so much anxiety. How did you deal with that, like being around black people? Because you're saying like what you just said about, you know, that lack of, you know, black people, but then it's like you couldn't even be amongst black people because that made you feel uncomfortable.
I am way more comfortable hanging out with white people than black people. I'll be honest with that. It's a hard space.
Yeah.
It's because they also seems like to view you as an outsider, not as an insider.
Right.
So when that happens, you're just like, oh, you're just going to stick what you're familiar with.
Yeah.
I'm like, I grew up with white parents. I can hang out with white people.
Right.
So I was like, yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely, I think that would be something that I'm going to start asking adoptees more, because I think that is such a fascinating idea and a fascinating experience. And it's very, very true. Let me ask you this way. And again, I could be putting words in your mouth, so if it's not the case for you, be like, keep that to yourself, Ladette. But maybe as I'm hearing you talk about that, I think for myself, I almost felt like they could smell that I was a fraud. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was BSing my way. when I tell you I was BSing, I mean, like, I think adoptees, people need to study us at another level, because the way I can, like I said, I can deal with my people within a variety of spaces, environments, whether it's just hang out with family, tiffos at some like bigger work event, like I know exactly what they want to hear, how to whatever. But when I would talk to Black people, it's like I felt like they could smell how, like the bullshit. Like they would be like, you're not white, but you're pretending to be white. Yeah. And you've neglected the Black parts of you. And I mean everything. Especially when I was younger, I knew my hair looked like, because I would see Black people and they always like knew how to do their hair and their edges, and they like knew how to dress well, and they knew how to like crosstalk, and they knew like lingo, whatever, that the white kids that I was trying to be like wanted to be. And I was like, I can't even do that. So I was like, and I just felt like a fraud. Did you feel like that?
Similar experience. I was just very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I will say I don't put myself in that in that area as often as I should be.
Even now.
Oh, even now I don't. Yeah. No. It's like, I have white friends.
Yeah.
I have one Black friend that I hang out with, and that's my girlfriend's sister's boyfriend.
Oh, interesting.
I told him, like, I finally have a Black friend to hang out with.
That is too funny. Yeah.
But it's just like, it's hard because you can't relate with them.
Yeah.
They also is like, some of them use the N-word, then you feel it's like, oh, then you get into this argument. Then it's like, the lingos I don't understand.
Yeah.
The dress code. But some of them also view themselves, they don't act the way they should be acting. It's like they view us lower than in middle school.
Yeah.
I was like, there was me and this girl.
Yeah.
Both colored.
Yeah.
Like, would only be two in the honors class.
Yeah.
And then rest would be either in the foundations or lower class.
Yeah.
But it's just like, some of them were very smart. They just didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't try.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, I wouldn't stoop that low.
Yeah.
So I was like, where do you want to go in life?
And you felt like, because there's that stigma and that sort of you know, like the idea that, you know, like Black people, right, more generally, doesn't, like I said, like the idea of like Ethiopians, the Africans, East African, like that doesn't even play, because you're just Black here, like you're just Black like everybody else, and that idea of what a Black person is, it's usually uneducated, athletic, you know, possibly athletic, besides that everything else is negative, you know, you're unkept, and you are uneducated, and you can't speak well, and you're not driven to do anything besides sports or rap or whatever that is. And so you felt like, as a result of you kind of defying that, having white parents, having white siblings, on top of that trying academically, you know, succeeding, obviously, if you're in honors and AP classes academically, you felt like that created even further a rift between you and the other Black kids, and as a result, that your identity as a Black person within America or New Hampshire.
Yes, it's that's a complete divide.
Yeah.
It's also, it comes down to, for me, is like, I couldn't definitely not relate to them.
You just couldn't relate.
No, it's just like at this point, I'm like, oh, I'm just white as hell.
Yeah.
So I was just like there. I'm like,
but how does that work though? Because, and I know what you mean when you say I'm white as hell. Like being like, you know, at this point,
it's
like
they define, is like, it's not you defining it.
Yeah.
It's like both the white and the Blacks both define me at this point.
Yeah.
Me. I was like, oh, yeah. Giddy on. I was like, they'll say it. I'm like, you're white. I'm like, it's like you're Black, but you're white on the inside.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, aren't you also white on the inside?
Yeah.
But no. It doesn't work that way. So it's like when you get that label at that point, you're stuck in one group. You're categorized as.
But how does that impact now, again, talking about you know, you've now have like left this area you're going to be soon. We talked about this, you know. you know, spreading your wings and getting your own place and living somewhere else. And you are no longer going to be white on the inside Gideon. Rest of society, unless they get to meet you and know you, you're just another black man. How is that transition going to be? Have you thought about it? Are you worried about it? Have you experienced it and you're concerned about it? Like, what's that been like considering yourself outside of your family in this like whiteness has kind of helped you claim this identity as like white Gideon that the rest of society doesn't really see? It's not going to matter.
I deal with that at times, you know? Yeah. It's like when you travel outside of Nashua, or it's like when I go to Canada.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you definitely see the difference. Like, oh, it's like where we go in Canada, it's like a lot of old people are there.
Yeah.
It's like it's an older community.
Yeah.
It's like I'll be walking around, and it's like my first like 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, it was like when we go down to downtown, it's like, well, you'll see people staring and stuff, but it's comes with the territory. That's what I say.
So you fully are aware of yourself as like an African or a black man within American society. You're aware of how the rest of society sees you despite the identity that you've grown here that is very, that kind of gives you this like false feeling of being like having like somewhat of a similar or ish privilege to whiteness. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Yeah. It's just limited to this community. It's like it doesn't go beyond it.
Right.
It's like that sense of false security is just there.
Right. And you're not concerned, you're not really concerned, or are you concerned about what that's going to be like when you are fully on your own now, like detached from your mother, as you're talking about her power in this community?
I'm not worried about it because at this point, if I see, I'm seeing more good than bad.
Okay.
I'm like, I like to hope for a good future, you know?
Yeah. So you, for right now, it's like you don't have anything to worry about.
No, I don't have anything to worry about as long as I keep on the straight path. That's all I say.
Okay. That's a very positive outlook. I do like that. Now kind of, you know, this has been a while, so we can start wrapping it up. Where are you now? Where are you today with how do you understand adoption and your adoption story today? Overall good, overall bad, everything else in between. It is a spectrum, obviously. It's not those two very extreme takes, but like, where are you in relation to your adoption story today?
I say it's both good and bad. I see, because now it's like you have a second family that took you in. It's like now it's, they love you for who you are and everything. It's like that has developed over the years, and I'm also rekindling my past as like connecting more with my siblings through Facebook Messenger and everything. And it's just like I'm understanding more what's going on and who I am on a personal level. At the same time, the bad part is just like you don't get those years before. It's like I didn't go to Ethiopia for like 15 years. It's like didn't see my sister, as like we didn't talk until I think it was like 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
It's like we didn't have that connection.
Yeah.
It's like I didn't have that connection until my uncle passed away, who put me up for adoption, and then his daughter was the one who finally got me connected with the rest of the family.
Wow.
So I was just like, he was the one that's like gate guarding the gate with all the information.
Yeah.
So
how's that for you, like knowing that?
I made my peace.
Yeah.
Made my peace. Things happen for a reason. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, would have been nice sooner. Then you don't have to go through all the mental crises you face at the same time. But
yeah,
I think I see more good than bad.
So you found despite, you know, you said, you know, you would have chosen to stay if you had a choice, right?
Oh, yeah. If I had a choice, I would have stayed. But now it's like I have more opportunity. I can go back. It's like with the education I have here. Mm-hmm. It's like with the, it's like they call it the American dream.
Yeah.
But it's like I have that choice now. It's like I can make it for myself. It's like no one else is going to make it for me.
That's a beautiful thing to say. And how does it feel to finally kind of regain that choice? Now you know you have a choice and you get to make choices for yourself and for your family in that relationship that you didn't have a choice before, but now you have it. Like, did you kind of come to that? Was that like a realization that you had that you're like, okay, wow, like I'm in control now?
Oh yeah, so when I got, it was like when I graduated college and it's just like when I'm finally making my own decisions now. It's like the car and everything. It's like it's empowering. It's like it's re-empowering. It's like I have the capabilities. It's like no one else is gonna choose for me. It's anymore. Like if people was like, no.
Yeah.
It's like now I can do what's good for me, what's best for me, and then it's like that is, I feel like, more empowering than anything.
Do you feel like you're reclaiming your autonomy in some way?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's like no more decisions being made by the parents.
Yeah.
No more decisions that are for me. It's like negatively going to impact me.
Right.
It's like it's finally, it's going to look better.
That is so incredibly. That's such a beautiful take. And I think it goes right back to that, what I was saying way at the beginning of our conversation about how, you know, adoptees are somehow burdened with all the negative consequences that come with adoption. So you're stripped of everything, but then you get blamed for not having those things, like the language, like the culture. It becomes somehow your choice. You do not have a choice in all of that, right? And then often your parents, I don't know about you, but your parents get all the positive, oh, he did a good thing, like they sacrifice something for you, and then you're dealing with these secondhand consequences that you didn't even know you're gonna have until you face it. And then now it's like kind of full circle where you kind of reclaim, but I guess it's like also it's the age and the time and the territory of all that, that now you're like, okay, now that I have my autonomy back, now that I have my choices back, I'm going to make the choices that I couldn't and that were made for me in the past.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's definitely an autonomy.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it. It's like, would I ever move back there?
Yeah.
I've been hooing and hollering.
Yeah.
It's like, I could definitely run for president over there.
There you go.
Definitely run the country.
Watch out.
Yeah, definitely could be fun.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, be realistic. I could take care of my siblings, which would be ideal.
Mm.
And then other than that, it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. And the last question I'll ask him, now you are off the hook, sir.
And then I can go to bed.
I know. I got an hour drive back home. Last question that I want to ask you is, what's one thing that you'd want to say to other adoptees, that younger ones, male, female, doesn't really matter. What would you say to them? And what would you also, what's one advice you would give to adoptee parents? That's been like, there's a kind of, that's a one question I've been getting, like adoptee parents want to know. And even though this podcast is not for them, respectfully, it's for adoptees. What would you say to them? You're like, this is something I'd say for adoptees. This is something that I would say for the adoptive parents. Suggestions, questions to think about, anything.
For adoptee parents, mostly. because it's like, I listen to your podcast, and I feel like, I feel like it's a little both, because it opens the eyes of the parents, and then it also allows kids, adoptees, to connect with people who have gone through similar experiences, and they can learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
For adoptee parents, is one advice is, for the hardest thing for adoptees is the culture, losing your culture, losing your past. It's just like, make more of an effort to keep some of the past.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't have to be all the time. They're just like keeping it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, so they have they can make the choice when they get older, is like, do they want in their life Ethiopia or do they not? And for adoptees, it gets better. It gets better eventually.
Hang in there.
Yep.
Well, Gideon, I cannot tell you. It's been, I mean, we were friends and we talked. We actually haven't talked in a while.
No, we have not.
Yeah, but thank you so much for taking the time tonight to come in and speak with me. I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate your vulnerability. And I know you're doing it for future other adoptees, younger adoptees, the ones that maybe, you know, we that would have, that can benefit from this, because, you know, we would have benefited from something like this if we were younger.
Oh, definitely we would have.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Wow. Thank you, Gideon, for sharing your story, your experience, your continued experience as an Ethiopian adoptee. It is, you know, so illuminating to the experiences of Ethiopian adoptees. And of course, all our experiences are so different. And even though we haven't had that many people on, you know, I think you speak to something that, you know, is really difficult. We can see how it kind of, those, you know, relationships that we have to Ethiopia, you know, our country, our culture, our language, you know, and how that impacts, you know, our relationship with biology that's there. It's so complicated and it can't be fixed. And, you know, it's this idea of being grateful. You know, it's so hard because, as Gideon talks about, you know, he has family, living relatives, you know, he has deeply rooted connections with people in Ethiopia and his family and his sister more specifically. And I think that is something that is so truly lost. And you know, some of us, like myself, you know, I my connection is not better or worse than Gideon's. It's that we should never, ever, and I should probably make that very clear, we never compare our experiences, because that's not fair, you know, and that's not what life's about or what this is about. But it's different, you know, and we can recognize the differences and, you know, how that shapes the way we see the world, the way we view adoption, the way we view ourselves, and the idea of, you know, this sort of chance that adoption gives adoptees, you know. It's very complicated. And listening to Gideon's story really forced me to kind of take a look at my own and see how, you know, how they're different and similar, and why that is. And especially with what he talks about in terms of, you know, how he would have chosen to stay in Ethiopia if he could, which I think is an incredibly honest take that is not easy to say, but it's your truth. And I think it will bring a lot of comfort to many on that are listening, who feel guilty to say that, but should never feel guilty to say that. I know one of the bigger topics that we've sort of discussed so far on the podcast is, you know, the kind of questions that adoptees get a lot, which is, you know, like, are you grateful, or you should be grateful, or it would have been so much worse if you had stayed, it's so much better for you now. You know, it doesn't really matter if you got to choose or not, because, you know, you probably would have chosen to have your life be this way. And at that, you know, that's such a moot point at this point, because we didn't have a choice, and we're here, and this is what our life is now. But at the same time, as Gideon speaks to it and saying that he would have chosen to stay, that is, I think that's just, it's brave and it's honest and it's true. It's so true for some people. Not everybody is in this place where it's, oh, you know, maybe in Bahailu's case, and he talks about how it was so difficult in the what if aspect of it. What if I had stayed? What if, you know, all these things? And then his illness kind of helped him put that to bed to some extent. I'm not saying that it's resolved or that it's not. I think that's for Bahailu to figure out, and that's his story. But he did say on the podcast, or in his interview, that, you know, him being really, really sick and knowing that he wouldn't have survived if he had been sick in Ethiopia,
to some extent, give him some a little bit of sense of closure, at least for now, you know, and that kind of somewhat resolved that idea of, you know, if I had stayed, you know, would have been worse, you know, maybe it is good that I came, you know, when I was adopted and I was put up for adoption. And there's mine where I'm genuinely in the middle. Would I have chosen to stay? Would I have chosen to, I don't, you know, that's such a difficult question for me to answer just because of my story and, you know, just like how my family is structured and the passing of my parents really for me complicates that. And there's Gideon on the other end who said, you know, like, you know, this, our adoption is obviously, you know, provided different experiences and opportunities. However, he's like, no, I think I would have chosen to stay because of the connections he had that were so deeply rooted in his connection. You know, and obviously in his sense of identity was totally connected to that, to his connections with his family there. And that's totally understandable. So again, I think we're starting to see this spectrum and we can start putting, you know, experiences on that spectrum. And it's not, again, not to compare, but simply to make people understand adoption is this gigantic umbrella term. And there are so many people that exist underneath it. And what's important is listening. What's important is understanding that there's a lot going on in giving adoptees the space to do that in a very honest way, in a very unfiltered way. And that is an opportunity that many of us have been very much robbed of or very scared to actually partake in such spaces because adoption puts us in a very uncomfortable position where we are forced to constantly meet the needs of other people and genuinely, I say, to some extent, suffer the consequences of adoption. And we take that on. And many of us did take it on well, but it does have a breaking point. So Gideon, again, thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate you coming on and telling us your story and your truth. I don't really want to speak much to it because you've said what you need to say. And thank you to the listeners. I hope you took something away. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on my email or through the DMs on Instagram. And until next time, enjoy your week or your weekend. Happy Halloween to those of you who celebrate it. And I'll see you in the next episode.